You're really noisy. What are you doing?
Opening a cheeseburger? What is it?
I'll stop.
Okay, we'll.
That's like the we'll person in the movie theater who has something like a rattly, like a really loud rapper. So it's like, oh, I can't make a lot of noise. I'm just going to do it slow and have it last over like a minute and a half while I open this package.
Okay, Andy, tell us your thoughts on Child's Play.
Well, sorry.
That's perfect.
He's like, you put me on the spot.
Testing, testing. Okay, we're fine.
Andy, are you driving?
Yeah, I'm in the drive-thru.
You are?
I ordered it, but it was taking so long that I just decided to call.
It's okay.
It won't matter. I've already paid.
Yeah. Count to five with me. One.
One.
Two, three, four, five, six.
All right. Welcome to TWIM with Seth, Andy, and Ben. We're two brothers and a cousin who discuss all the movies in wide release. Starting with movies new to the top 10 last week. There were three movies new to the top 10. What, you want to get your burger first, Andy?
I was going to put it on mute, but I'm sorry.
That's a great movie title.
We're actually just filming a podcast.
That's okay. Order your burger.
Anyway, never mind.
No, you're good.
Are you in high school? Hey.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Me too.
Were you the one that said she was a sophomore?
I thought she was a sophomore.
Yeah, she graduated. She like walked in. She's like, the guy in the car was like, "Are you a sophomore in high school?" And I'm like,
"You well, I just
she looks young.
I just never know, you know."
Thank you. Thank you. Just here's an example. Doesn't have to go into
the Yep. Thank you. I'm ready, guys.
We're going to cover movies new to the top 10 from last weekend, starting with Anna, that came in at number 9, earning $3.6 million. Kind of a disappointment due to the scandal, which I guess we'll talk about. And then Child's Play came in at number 2, earning $14 million. And Toy Story 4 owned the weekend, coming in at number 1, earning $120 million. And then we're going to do reviews of... Well, no, we're going to do reviews of those movies, and then we're going to preview movies coming out next week. Yesterday is the only movie in wide release, and then I guess Spider-Man Far From Home is this weekend, but it doesn't come out till Tuesday. It's kind of a weird release date, and that comes out in wide release too. So we'll preview those two movies. I'm excited for Yesterday, though. That looks really good.
Yesterday is kind of like the teenage fantasy. I remember learning a song on the piano. I thought, it would be so cool if no one else knew the song and they thought I wrote it. I feel like that's the whole premise of Yesterday. Guy's in love with Beatles. Yeah. He learned some songs and thought, oh, wouldn't it be awesome if... You know, these are my songs. And
I think we've all dreamed of that. Like, you know, I don't know if you guys remember the talent shows in high school, but there's always someone that did some like old song or like some really cool song and sang it in a duet. And
yeah,
you just wished you were them. And
yeah, I know. Like this hardcore. When I was a senior, some kids did like this hardcore Metallica songs, like as heavy as they could make them. Sounds silly right now, but it was really cool.
Oh yeah, the girls loved it in high school.
We were probably all at that, Ben, because Seth was a sophomore, I was a junior, and you were a senior.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's start with Anna that came in at number 9.
It's quite the fairy tale you got going on here. From top flight model in Moscow to rubbing shoulders with the elite. What was the nature of your relationship with Oleg Filenkov?
I just played a clip from the trailer for Anna. What did you guys think of this?
I liked it. I thought it was okay. So Seth, before I saw it, I saw your text. What do you say? It's like a Mission Impossible kind of?
Yes, I got a Mission Impossible vibe from it. Didn't you?
I guess a little bit. I think that set my expectations a little high.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a decent movie. It was okay, but there were just some glaring flaws that just bothered me. But also, the preview, I don't know. I'm annoyed that the preview gave so much away. Because the best fight scene was in the preview, where she's in the restaurant.
Oh, yeah,
it's like a Jason Bourne, where she's just mowing people down and doing acrobatic.
Yeah, that was a great action scene. And that you're right, that the action scene kind of hooked you, and you thought you were going to get more of it, but that was really the best that they had to deliver in the movie.
That was it. And what do you think about, they kept doing, a scene would happen, and then they surprise you. Like, she pulls out a gun and shoots that guy, you're like, wait, what? Like, what is she doing with a gun? And then they're like, 6 months later, or they flash back.
6 months earlier,
2 years earlier. So that I think trying to add those twists became predictable a little bit, where something would happen, you're like, okay, well, just, you know, you're going to show me what really happened in a minute.
So this was an interesting experience because I went to the movie and I really, really had a good time. I loved it. It felt like Mission Impossible to me. And I loved the hooks. They did it maybe four times. They would show a hook and then they would go back and it was like reverse engine. Like they'd show you how she got there. And then they'd show another hook and you're like, whoa, how did that happen? And they'd go back and do it. And when I watched the movie and loved it, I was really surprised to see critics hated it. And it sounded like a lot of the people I listened to
did not like this.
I think it was maybe a little disorienting, especially if you weren't paying close attention. Or if you didn't like those hooks and the time, because the chronology was totally out of order.
Yeah, it got confusing.
And so
maybe the critics just didn't pay enough attention, sir.
Maybe.
I honestly don't understand the negative buzz at all, because it was just as good as a Mission Impossible movie. It was super fun.
I thought
it was a great debut for that actress.
Maybe sexist? Sexism?
I don't think it was quite that good. Actually, I don't think it even comes close to as good as a Mission Impossible. But it really had some really cool elements that delivered. My biggest complaints are that I wish I hadn't seen the preview. I think it would have worked so much better if you didn't have those spoilers from the preview. You didn't know she was going to go in that restaurant and mow everybody down. Like things like that. Because it really would have worked the first half of the movie if you're just... Because remember the first person she kills, it was just out of nowhere. You're like, wait, what? Why does she have a gun? But of course, I knew in the movie that all the stuff was going to happen.
Yeah, so it was actually really interesting the way they did it. Because they would hook you with an assassination. And you were like, whoa, where did that come from? And then they'd go back and create it from the beginning. And they did that over and over. And I guess it was predictable they were going to do it, but it was a really fun ride.
Yeah.
And I thought her character was interesting because she, there's this theme of those Russian nesting dolls. The beginning of the movie, she actually is at a little flea market selling those Russian nesting dolls. You know, they have a doll inside a doll inside a doll.
Yeah.
And that became a symbol of her different roles and personalities and different, you know, sides. It was constantly unclear what side she was on.
Yeah.
And then the way they tried to show that she was they didn't really portray this, but they told you she was an excellent chess player. And then the way the movie tied up, it was like she was, you thought she got beat at chess, but then she'd make another move. And, you know, I thought that was kind of cool. A cool theme, you know, for her to be a chess player, because that's kind of how, you know, she was making moves against these other bureaucrats.
Yeah, the entire movie, she was in a pickle the entire time because you don't know which side she's on. And she's in a really tight spot all the time and she's getting through it. And then they do this 2 years earlier and then you see how she actually was way ahead of everybody.
Did you think that she was a good actor?
Oh yeah, I thought she was great. I think everyone in it did a great job.
The only complaint I have, I think, is her love interest. She had three separate love interests. One was a girl, but...
Andy.
Yeah, Andy, you're really noisy. What are you doing?
Opening a cheeseburger? What is it?
I'll stop.
Okay, we'll...
That's like the person in the movie theater who has something like a rattly, like a really loud rapper. So like, oh, I can't make a lot of noise. I'm just going to do it slow and have it last over like a minute and a half while I open this package.
Okay, I stopped. I'm done.
So I thought her chemistry with Luke Evans worked really well. But then when she started making other connections with like having other lovers, I was like, wait, what's happening here? But I guess James Bond does that. So maybe it is a sexist way for me to look at it. Because wouldn't James Bond have two or three love interests in a single film?
Yeah, but with James Bond, I guess you weren't wondering if he was using them. Because in Anna, that girl love interest, it seemed like she was using her. You know what's so interesting? That girl, her girlfriend was just the best. She totally loved her. She was so sweet, caring, compassionate.
Very patient.
And Anna was so cold to her the entire time.
I know. That was kind of sad.
And in the very end, she says something like to those two guys, well, you guys are my only family. Like, what?
Yeah.
They're your only family. What about the girl you've been living with who's so good to you for all these years?
Right. That was weird, huh? I did think that she had really steamy chemistry with Luke Evans and basically no chemistry with Cillian Murphy, I thought. And so it was hard when she squared them off together. It was a little love triangle, literally, towards the end of the movie. I just didn't feel it with him. I think we were supposed to.
And it was weird how they got in that situation together, because she's in Hawaii and he happens to be there too. And
yeah,
it was just weird. Like, a little. Oh, come out of the closet. We got to talk. And then
I know
they got super close. And yeah, that felt really forced.
Right. It did. It didn't seem like natural. What did you think of Helen Mirren? Because I was really impressed with her. I got the vibe from her of Edna from The Incredibles.
Oh, yeah.
You remember Edna?
Yes.
She seemed totally. A lot like that to me. I thought she was such an interesting character, like this matriarch.
She was really good. Almost a little too good for the movie. You know what I think? The reason I don't think this movie did that well is because of they were trying so hard to shock you with things. They kept, it was out of order. They could have made it just as good if it was chronological.
Well, Pulp Fiction worked.
Well, think about Helen Mirren, her character. Because if, I don't want to spoil it, but if you knew everything that was at stake at the end, that would have made it so much more enjoyable. How she was trying to escape and, you know, fighting through all those guys. There was a lot more on the line.
Yeah, I guess it could have worked that way too, huh? Because they did get caught up in trying to surprise you with gotchas, you know?
Yeah.
Like reveals. There's constantly a new reveal. And maybe it would have resonated more if they just told you the story and let you be there along the way instead of trying to surprise you at the end.
And I think that's why the fight scenes felt like dumb fight scenes. Because you know what's going to happen and didn't really feel like... I mean, there was so much more on the line that you didn't know about.
Yeah. Well, that scene in the restaurant that was in the trailer was excellent. And I love creative fighting. And it seems like in these action movies, the protagonist, like the fighters, always have to run out of bullets because gunfights aren't right. really as interesting to watch. And so then you get to, like in John Wick, where you got to see him beat up a guy with a plate and then beat up a guy with horses and then beat up a guy with like throwing knives. In this, they did something kind of similar, not quite as creative as John Wick, but she had these plates she was using for a while and it looked pretty brutal. I mean, she cracked these plates in two and she was slicing guys' throats with them. Yeah, that was a great fight scene, I thought. Yeah. But it was the only real fight. I mean, there was a montage later where she would just show up and she would just make quick work of it, just fire a shot in their head and it was over, you know?
Yeah. There's something about the way Russian, maybe it's KGB or Russian things are portrayed. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen that, The Americans? I think it's on Amazon.
Yes.
Oh, no. I've heard of Andy. Who's telling me about that? I haven't seen it, though. I know Felicity, somebody is in it.
Felicity Jones?
Wait, is that her name?
Is that a real name or is that her character's name?
Oh, yeah. That was her character's name, huh? Yeah, yeah. That's
so
funny.
So in that movie, it's they're Russian spies. And in this movie, they followed a similar element, the way they portrayed the Russian KGB, where, you know, when they portray the American, let's just say like the military, it's like this endless resource of tanks and guns and trained people. On the Russians, it's usually along the lines of they don't have the best equipment. And there was a scene in this movie where they hand Anna a gun, say, okay, go kill so-and-so. And it turns out the gun's unloaded.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't have any bullets in it. And they say to her, well, that's on you. You need to check your equipment.
Right.
You know? And so there's this clear disparity in how they're portrayed. I thought that was really interesting how it came through in this. There were a lot of elements that Helen Mirren's character had where it felt really Russian to me, where she's like, well, yeah, you got to sort it out. You know, you're in there, you got to sort it out. And yeah, a lot of agents die and that's that, you know, we kind of like, we're going to wait for you 5 minutes and then we're leaving. So I enjoyed that part. I thought it was really good. Cause like rewind back to Men in Black. Can you imagine the Men in Black people's character saying, oh yeah, 5 minutes and I'm leaving. You're on your own. You're done.
Yeah.
You know, like the Americans always have this endless resource of safety nets and backup and drone strikes.
And no, don't leave any soldier behind. And
Yeah.
But what didn't that turn out to be a test for her? The unloaded gun?
I wonder, because you don't think, I mean, think about just in a workplace, when you hire somebody, you get her trained, she'd just gone through training. You're not just going to set them up to fail right away. So I took it as that could have been a legitimate mistake.
In real life, you wouldn't. But didn't they portray it in the movies though that was a test?
I wasn't sure. I wondered about that. I felt like it was just something that happened. And they're like, you got to, you know, danger doesn't come with a warning. What's the tagline they said? Danger doesn't come with a warning?
I don't remember.
They said it two or three times in the movie.
Huh.
And that was really... that was a theme that happened a few times to her where you have to think on your feet. You have to figure stuff out.
Yeah. Well, she's supposedly a master chess player. So I guess that was kind of like ultimately that was her power, you know, it's not so much like hand-to-hand combat, but calculating strategy, you know, moving pawns against each other between the different agencies. So anyway, I had a ton of fun. The audience score, by the way, was 80%, but the critic score is 29%. Okay. So
I'm a lot closer to the audience. Is that where you are?
I think I'm with the audience. I wonder how much this scandal with the director, Luc Besson or whatever his name is, I wonder how much of that influenced the critics. Because yeah. I didn't see a single critical review that didn't mention that. So that would be a shame, but it seems like that maybe is part of why it scored so low. And why they didn't pre-screen it.
I think they made a couple, there are a couple flaws they did. Some of my biggest complaints were, I mean, she's this beautiful woman and it's like every man she encountered, she slept with. Yeah. Like why were they forced to do that? And then they were trying really hard to sexualize her. You know, it was just unnecessary. Well, like in a 90s movie, of course.
That was my instinct too, Ben. That's what I said, is I didn't like the romance. It seemed really random and I didn't think she had good chemistry with the other two love interests. But then I was thinking, we gave James Bond a pass in every single James Bond movie. So are we really being sexist about it? Like we'll let men do it, but not women?
Okay. Now that you said that again, it's like striking me differently. Yeah, you have a really good point.
Yeah, but I do agree with you. That was my gut reaction to it, is like, wait, she's just having all these random sex encounters with everybody she meets?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
By the way, the trailer was done. The trailer itself is a work of art. The music, the song they chose for the trailer is really good. In the fight scenes on beat. So the trailer is really good.
Especially in the montage. That part wasn't in the trailer, but they show her assassinating guys to the beat.
In the trailer.
I don't think it was in the trailer. It was in the montage in the movie where they show her assassinating like 100 guys. Do you remember that part? I didn't see it in the trailer. She would just show up and shoot each guy on beat. It was cool. I don't know if you remember, but I don't think that was in the trailer. Okay, well, that's all did you have anything else to say on Anna?
Nope.
Okay, and that is Anna. The next movie to enter the top 10 last week, coming in at number 2, was Child's Play.
At Caslon, we believe that happiness is about more than entertainment. It's about being known, understood, loved. Introducing your new best friend.
People, let me tell you about my best friend.
I just played a clip from the trailer for Child's Play. This is 62% on Rotten Tomatoes. Andy and I saw this together. It was scary. Not the scariest movie we've seen so far. What did you guys think?
I didn't see this one.
Okay, Andy, tell us your thoughts on Child's Play.
Well, sorry.
That's perfect.
He's like, you put me on the spot. I gotta hide.
And Andrew just hung up on us. He couldn't get put on the spot.
Maybe he wanted to eat his cheeseburger.
That's pretty funny. I know that wasn't on purpose, but it was really funny.
Oh, there he is.
So sorry, I hit my earphones and it shut the thing up.
It was funny. You hung up on us because you didn't want to talk about it.
I, in an odd way, I really kind of enjoy these movies because I don't know if it's like, you know, you meet these really innocent or cute girls that seem so sweet, and then you find out that they cut themselves like in spots on their body where no one can see, so they can feel. Yeah. And I feel like these movies are a little bit like that for me. Like they're so like extreme that I actually feel something instead of like these kind of boring same comedies I always see. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I usually would never see these movies if we weren't doing the podcast because they look disgusting and gross and scary. But when as we've been seeing them, I enjoy them. And this was the same. I enjoyed it.
This is a remake of the old Chucky movie, which was Child's Play. But I never saw the original. I mean, I might have seen clips of it. I'm familiar with it for sure. But I don't know if I've ever watched it.
Well, it was like in the culture of like high school, you'd hear people talk about Chucky. But, you know, back then, I was very conservative in what I would watch. You know, I didn't even watch Seinfeld because my mom said it was bad. Or do you know what I mean? And it probably was bad for Mormon values. So
I don't think I saw Chucky either.
Yeah, it was.
You were pretty young when it came out.
1993, or was it 93, Seth?
Maybe.
Yeah, not that. That sounds right. I don't know. I think it was that. Maybe a little older. But yeah. So this, I did feel like. this Chucky hit a little bit closer to home because it was a Chucky that was connected to the internet and acted kind of like a home assistant, kind of like Alexa or Google Home, you know, and it tied into this, like, you know, this tech company's network, and it could control the TV and control the electric systems, because that's how our homes are kind of being built that way now. They're connected through the internet so that we can say, Siri, turn out the lights, you know, which I do, you know, yeah, with our Hue lights, and Siri, turn the heat to 72 degrees. Like, you can do that kind of stuff now. And so it doesn't seem that far-fetched to have a little doll. I mean, this was in the third episode of Black Mirror this season was kind of a doll that was connected. And it's a little bit of technophobia, you know, like Luddite feel. I did feel like they were going there with it. And so it seemed a little more relevant. I'm not sure what the first Chucky, like how it came to life. But in this one, it was a home assistant, basically. But for some reason, they made it like the ugliest doll you can imagine, like with this ugly red hair and freckles, yeah, and stuff.
Very disturbing. But it's more of a home assistant. I mean, not as much. It is a home assistant, but it's also like a child's daycare friend, which yeah, is really disturbing.
But they do have these kind of doodads on the market now, you know, like you can buy a cute little robot that is basically an Amazon Echo that will, you know, just like, it'll like zoom around the house and with a camera on it and stuff. And you can tell it to do things. And so
is that the one? This is something looks like a little spider.
I haven't seen that. Well, I think there's lots of them. I think the Amazon Echo is being built into a lot of different things now. But I know on Amazon the other day, I just came across a little cute robot that would just like, it had wheels and it would like, you know, it would just like go around. It was autonomous. It would just like go around and had a camera on it, and you could give it any kind of Alexa command. And so this Chucky doll was kind of, it was based on that premise, and it felt more it felt relevant. It felt relevant, and like you could see where this could, maybe something like this could happen. And the movie actually started out really fun. It reminded me a lot of Goonies, didn't it, Andy, when the three kids like were trying to get Chucky to scare the stepdad or the,
yeah,
like that love interest for Aubrey Plaza. And they were just playing all these pranks with them. And it was really, really fun during that part.
Yeah, like the guy would open up the fridge and then he'd shut it and there'd be this creepy doll just staring at his face.
Yeah, they'd train Chucky to like lift his mouth up and his eyes and like contort his face in this really creepy way.
Yeah.
They trained him to do that. And they're like, okay, now go scare my dad's boyfriend. So that way, actually, wait, that part of it was really fun.
Did you say
really
my dad's
fun
boyfriend? Wasn't it Aubrey Plaza? Sorry, the mom?
Yeah. Sorry, I said it wrong. My mom's boyfriend.
Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha.
It was Aubrey Plaza's.
So
boyfriend.
What made him evil?
And
in the
Aubrey
movie?
Plaza. Do you want to summarize that, Andy? I think in the factory, one of the workers was disgruntled and he put like a bad chip. I actually missed it, Andy. Andy, you had to fill me in on it. What happened?
Yeah, essentially it was like in China, and this factory Nazi guy walks up to this like homeless looking worker and says like, you're doing a horrible job, you know, you're gonna be put back on the street where you belong if you don't do better at this production line. And then he walks away and he gets this kind of evil look, and he sticks this chip in the wrong place, and then he jumps out the window and kills himself.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
the disgruntled. So there was just this one defective Chucky on the market.
Okay.
And Aubrey Plaza worked in this, like, I don't know, kind of like a, not
Fred
quite
Meyer,
a Walmart, more like,
yeah.
It was like a
JCPenney or, just, I don't know, Shopko.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. And somebody brought it back in and said, hey, it's defective. And she was like, oh, well, they're coming out with a new model with blonde hair, and nobody will really care if I just keep this one, because they're just going to get rid of all these older models anyway. So I'll just take it home to my son because I can't afford to get him a birthday gift. So that's kind of how Chucky ends up in her home.
Was the movie scary?
It was really gory and gruesome. But basically the latter half of the movie, Chucky was extremely frightening and taunting.
He kind of reminded me of like a dog in a way, because dogs don't, they're like, they can't think logically, like their instinct kicks in, and you think, oh, be nice to that other dog, and a dog will just go try to kill another dog, and so, yeah, because he's trying to protect, yeah, you. And this is how he was. He fell in love with his child, and anyone who did anything wrong, he would try to kill it.
That, yeah, and that's when I actually liked Chucky, is when he was a protector of, what was his name, Andy?
Yeah.
And, like, the boy that he latched onto. Like, he was a, like, anybody that took, you know, anybody that offended his child, like, he would defend him. And
this is sounding a lot like Toy Story.
Let me think. Toy Story 4.
Well, the boy's name is Andy. He has the toy.
That's true, huh? That is funny. But they were both Andy. Yeah, that's funny, huh? Yeah, so anyway, the Chucky is actually pretty lovable in the first half because he's such a loyal companion trying to defend Andy. But then when he takes it too far, it's like, and it's really gory. It's very, very gory.
And that's, so I felt like that was where kind of some, there was actually, even though he was gory, and you kind of, they kind of made you a little bit attached to Chucky so that you still kind of felt sad for him when they turned on him, because he was an innocent,
yeah,
like dog, animal, like very, mm-hmm. He didn't, I guess he did eventually get really malicious, but he was kind of an innocent, like Play-Doh, you know, you could create what,
yeah.
So
he had a reason for doing what he was doing. It wasn't just random killing.
Right. And it did, yeah. It did kind of like, Darwin eyes, like he kind of, what do you call that? He evolved to like a horrible, horrible. And yeah. I mean, we could go into the spoilers, but I was sad that died. That
Oh, yeah, yeah. That is kind of a spoiler.
Oh.
I mean, yeah, yeah. But, I mean, it was, yeah. So maybe I'll cut that out, or we'll do a spoiler section or something.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I was sad about that, too. I thought it was cool how evil Chucky was now connected to the internet and could pull some cool tricks, you know? Like put video on the TV screen, or replay, like, audio recordings that he'd heard people say and, like, use it against him. Like, he kept calling the Aubrey's
that.
Boyfriend and... Yeah, so he was really good at terrorizing people psychologically.
He's like that guy in the white truck that's like doing surveillance that could like, oh, open this door. Like, you know how they're like telling him through, he could yeah. do everything yeah. like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he could do any technology, like, so he would terrorize people by, like, they're standing by a TV, he would start playing footage of something he'd recorded through his eye cameras.
It's kind of...
That was, you know...
Yeah, it's kind of like that Mormon, like, doctrine myth where... At the end of when you die, you're going to watch a video of your whole entire life. That's what he yeah. would do.
All the bad parts that you'd be embarrassed about.
Yeah, he was doing that.
Is that like a cemetery thing? They shame you?
I don't know. I just remember people would say, well, when you watch the video of your life.
Oh, I've heard. Yeah, I have memories of people speculating. So his, in the trailer, I didn't like his voice, Chucky's voice. How was it in the movie?
It didn't bother me. I thought it was fine.
I think near the end, it kind of morphed into this, like, I'm Chucky, you know, like more. Yeah,
turned into Mark Hamill's Joker voice. Yeah. But for most of the movie, it was nothing. It wasn't like that. I do think Aubrey Plaza is so fun to watch in anything.
She's
just so funny, and she steals the scene in every scene of every show she's in. She's just so good.
She really was, like, she's a great, I like her. I just, she was delightful to watch. And
because we watch Parks and Rec like a few times a week, and yeah, so that's good to hear, because she's, yeah, she does, she play kind of the same character in this movie?
No, it is a different character, but she has the same kind of style, you know. Yeah, but she's uh-huh. a mom, so like she's totally different. I mean, you can tell she's like thinking about her son, and in Parks and Rec she's a kid, kind of, you know. She's like,
yeah, like a,
she's more selfish teenager. In Parks and Rec,
she's like an artist, like a, like, you know, art history. If you go through art history, you can always like say, oh, that's a Picasso, or that's a this. You get what you like about her in a different style, but it's, you know, it's her.
So have you guys seen, she was in a movie that made me laugh so hard that I cried. It was something about wedding dates or something.
Wait, you cried in a movie?
No, I was like,
I think I know what you're talking about.
It was like John and Dave need wedding dates or something.
Yeah.
And she was so funny in that movie. I like could not keep it together when I was watching. Okay. I don't have anything else to say about Child's Play, Andy. I would give it maybe 50% on Rotten Tomatoes, but the critic consensus is 62%. So
pretty good reviews. Same with the audience score. Same score, 62%. Do you have anything else to add, Andy?
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, I would never go see it again. But I might watch it like on a friend sleepover with
maybe. I don't. If we weren't doing this podcast, there's no way I would have seen that.
I would have.
I would have definitely seen Anna though.
Yeah, I would have never seen this show. I would have never seen Pet Sematary. I would have never seen... Yeah. And now I'm starting to like them. And my and what's funny is there's some people that like these stuff. My niece got 5 horror videos for her birthday, and she watched all of them with her friend. And
really?
And I'm excited to see Annabelle. Is that the one that's the new... The other
yeah,
one?
That's the doll comes to life.
When's that one?
Okay.
I think it's... We were just talking about it. Isn't it this week?
This week? Wait, a doll that comes alive? Isn't that Chucky?
Hasn't that been...
And Toy Story.
Well, yeah, Toy Story. Every movie. Okay, so that is Child's Play. Coming in at number 1 last weekend is Toy Story 4.
Woody? Why am I alive? You are a toy. You belong to Bonnie. These are your friends.
Woody, I have a question. Actually not just one. I have all the questions.
I just played a clip from the trailer for Toy Story 4. This is 98% on Rotten Tomatoes, so it's critically beloved. It earned a ton of money, $118 million. What did you guys think of this one?
I thought there was this one time when my dad told me how smart directors were, and or not necessarily smart, but they planned things throughout the movie. Like, I don't know if you guys remember Home Alone. I've talked about this, but the old guy next door is kind of like the guy that everyone thinks is bad and scary, but he has these wounds on his hands and he's like a Christ-like figure. But as I watched this movie, it totally reminded me of the Garden of Eden, with like you have the girl who's trying to get what's the main character cowboy's name?
Dr. Woody.
Yeah, Woody.
Woody.
she's trying to get Woody to leave the Garden of Eden and come to like the lost toy. Anyway, I found it really fascinating. And maybe we should go over the overview of the story. But that, I don't know if you thought that. Did you guys think that? Did you see that?
Not at all. No? I didn't see any religious parallels, but I'm not immersed in that.
Well, I'm not necessarily.
So she was like beguiled. She was Eve and she tempted Woody to eat the forbidden fruit.
Yeah, she the serpent.
No, I don't think that when I say that I'm not imposing this idea that I just think it's kind of a, what do they call those stories that repeat themselves through time? Dang it, I can't think of it. But
like an archetype, or what would you call it? Like a
Well, just, unless you're comparing this to Toy Story 3, I thought it was so much like Toy Story 3.
Did you? I didn't see that one. Tell us why you thought that.
It's been a few years since I saw it. I thought Toy Story 4 was fine. It was okay. Like, the kids really enjoyed it, but it felt like they just rehashed the same themes from Toy Story 3. There's an evil toy who tries to trap them and holds them hostage, and they have to escape, and then they're on an adventure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But the movie was funny. I really enjoyed the new characters, and I was cracking up at, I sent you guys that link to Keanu Reeves and Jordan Peele and others reading their lines.
Yeah.
So I sent you the link. It starts you right when Jordan Peele does his lines. He plays the little, it's like a chick or duck. He's a ducky and he's attached to the bunny.
Keegan Key is Ducky and Jordan Peele is Bunny.
They were hilarious characters. And then those Keanu Reeves character, what's the blast off? He's like a
Canadian stunt.
Oh, that was Keanu Reeves?
That was Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
Then they meet him like, hey, this is my friend. He's like, hold on. He has to do his poses. Does the one pose,
all
the other
these
pose,
different poses.
While he's on his motorcycle. The characters were so funny. And then who were the guys where they met? There were 3 of them. And they're like high-fiving each other. And then there was like the third wheel out. Like no one would high-five him. And he was always missing out.
Yeah, those guys. They were like.
So funny.
They were the old G.I. Joe, like Mr. T-ish.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of their name.
Mr. T-ish. Figures.
So funny. <Yeah. laughs> That just cracked me up, because like he puts his arm up and like those two high five each other. He's just standing there like, okay, my arm's still up, like, and then they run off. He's like, okay, I'll just follow him.
Yeah, that was so the funny part, probably the funniest part of the movie to me, was Key and Peele doing the plush rush sequence where they were like, okay, we have an idea.
Fantasizing about and how they're going to get it the was, key.
It was a fantasy sequence, but it fooled me every time. I'm like, what? Toys are like revealing themselves? And then I was like, okay, that was a fantasy. And then they do it again and it would fool me again.
I think that's the first time Toy Story's ever done a sequence like that, where they showed something on screen a that fantasy. Wasn't actually yeah. happened.
Yeah.
And did you stay till after the credits when they had another one?
Yeah, that was the best one. That one was so funny. Where they're like shooting lasers out of their eyes and Ducky is breathing fire.
Did you take your kids to this, Seth?
Yes. Yeah.
What did they think?
They really liked it too. Yeah, they liked it. Ben, I actually felt like the theme, I was surprised. You know, most of the sequels, my biggest complaint about sequels, especially animated sequels, is it does really seem like they repeat the formula. They're like, okay, let's just do what we did in the last one. We'll just mix it up a little bit. And I was impressed that they didn't, like, it seemed like a real progression for Woody and Buzz. Like, Woody kind of had this empty nest theme, him and Bo Peep. And I don't feel like that existed previously. Like, he was kind of like at the stage of his life where he's your grandpa, he didn't have a kid anymore, and now he was thinking about the grandkids, which was Sporky, I guess, or Forky in this.
Whatever they called him. Right. Yeah. There were some new things. I left the movie just feeling like, you know, they have all these really fun characters. And if you think about the first movie, all of those characters experienced everything together and you got to see all of their reaction. This one was more isolated. Like there were, like, you know, the groups got separated. You got to see Woody's experience. You got to see that. And he'd like come back and report to him. Then you'd briefly see their stuff. So
yeah,
I left feeling like, you know, can't we just have one where the kids play with the toys and they just get into shenanigans? Like, why does there have to be this evil thing going on? That's just how I felt. I think that's what I didn't like about the third one too. Like, wasn't that the evil teddy bear?
Yeah, but I didn't think Gabby was, like, I don't think Gabby, well, she did have her henchmen that were clearly seemed evil. They seemed like Chucky's. That's what they felt like Chucky's. Because I'd just seen Chucky and I'm like, oh, it's the same evil doll. But it didn't seem like she would have ripped out the voice box without his consent. Do you think? Because she was like a quasi-evil character. I mean,
I thought she wasn't
quite
the...
Yeah, I guess, I don't know. It did look like the henchmen were chasing down Woody. But speaking of Gabby, Andrew, if you didn't cry in the last 15 minutes, then you don't have a heart. I mean, you can make fun of me all you want for crying in every movie I see, but...
Did you, Andy?
This one was a good litmus test to know if you had a heart or not. Did you cry in the last 15 minutes?
I don't know. I don't.
With that little girl that was stranded?
No, I didn't. I don't cry.
Seth, yeah, I got to tell you, when that happened, I just thought, okay, it felt formulaic to me. I'm like, nope, I'm not falling for it. Like, I know what you're doing. I'm not, nope. But it was touching. But you know what's really funny? So we saw this. I saw this with Lisa and my kids on our kids on Saturday. And then that night we went to dinner with some friends and they were saying like, oh, Ben, we just saw so-and-so you work with. And she just came out of Toy Story 4 and she was just bawling. Like, her eyes were all puffy and red. And they said they were the last ones to leave the theater because she was crying so long.
it got me pretty good. And Telly was like, Dad, my eyes are watering. I'm like, yeah, that's because this is sad. It felt
formulaic to me. Maybe I'm just jaded.
Where have you seen that before? So a little girl that's lost from her parents?
No, I just felt like they could have had that scene earlier, but the way it happened, I think, was orchestrated to evoke an emotion.
See, I thought like, I haven't seen, I'm not a big Toy Story aficionado. What do you call that? I felt like they did break ground with, like, just him leaving, like, and not going back to his friends. And then even that part.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't see that coming. I thought she would have been excited to be with the group and the friends. And that was kind of a brave thing to leave and face rejection again. So, I mean, I do see what you mean, like, formulaic, that there's a little girl crying. But I thought it was a twist to me where she actually, like, is brave again after she just got rejected. And
yeah.
Yeah, that was, I mean, Gabby, the evil character, she's the one that had had all the, you know, caused all the tears during the movie because her character progression was just, it was almost pitiful. Like,
yeah,
when she got rejected, you just really felt for her. Like uh-huh. she felt like it was her one chance. And then this idea of toys bringing comfort to kids, you know, even when Bonnie made that little Forky in kindergarten, it was like the one thing that made her comfortable, gave her comfort. And they show this other little girl lost her parents. She's stranded in the middle of a fair and she finds this doll. I mean, you can see that actually bringing comfort to a kid. And you can call that formulaic, but I haven't seen that anywhere. I don't think it's a formula at all.
I don't.
I think it's the opposite of a formula.
I didn't mean that it's was totally formulaic. Novel. Maybe I'm just jaded. That part was great because it was actually kids playing with their toys.
Yeah.
So my second favorite part of the movie, besides the plush rush sequence, was when the toys took over the motorhome.
That was so funny.
And they were trying to, the dad was trying to stop it, but they kept like making it drive. And this evil unicorn doll was like so excited for the dad to go to jail. They're like, oh yeah, dad's going to go to jail. Oh yeah.
Yeah. My kids loved that part. They kept talking afterwards like, the unicorn tried to put the dad in jail. Dad, the unicorn tried to put the dad in jail.
It was like so evil. It was like.
That was hilarious how they were taking over that what was it, camper or something? Like,
yeah,
they're like, it was a. They like find some cords, unplug them, plug them in, unplug, plug them in. The Jeep's going down the street and he can't steer it. He can't drive it. And the police are following him. He's like trying to open the window. I can't control this thing. That was so funny.
Yeah, Forky. Like they keep trying to unlock it and then Forky locks it and they just do it over and over again. And
yeah, that was my like, little boy's totally messing part, with the- where they're like, every time he unlocks it, Forky would lock it. Stellan loved that part. He was telling me about that all night.
Did you...
Go ahead, Seth.
Did you like Forky as a character? Because I thought he was kind of one note at first and just kind of dumb. But
yeah, same.
He as grew the movie on me. Went on... Yeah. And I loved the way he I mean, all of the toys, the way they move is kind of unique for, like the way Woody walks is really different than the way that Buzz will like hop around and stuff like an action hero. Uh-huh. But then when they show Forky walking on the side of the road, he's just hobbling back and forth because he doesn't have legs. Like, he only has little feet and
like he's halfway and then, falling apart all the time.
Yeah. What were you gonna say, Andy?
What I was gonna say is, I don't know, I think before I gotta preface this with saying that the example I'm using, I feel like we're all this at different times, but in middle school, like I just kind of intuitively got that I didn't have to try hard to like have girls like me. And there was this one kid, I don't know if you guys remember him, and this isn't how he is now, but in middle school, everyone has odd stages, but you remember Mike Smart?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He would try so hard to get Stephanie Perry, like so hard. And that's kind of like what the girl, and it was just like almost a turnoff. And that girl reminded me, bringing it back to dating, what's the little girl's name? What's the little toy's name that gets-
Bonnie?
No, the toy that gets rejected.
Oh, Gabby.
Yeah, she just wanted it so hard that like it was almost too much, you know, like, and it's always that person that just doesn't care that people like, and I thought that was kind of fascinating. And then she was kind of humbled and found the right guy, the right needy person that would like her back.
Yeah.
But
she had to lower her expectations a little bit. So not go for the hottest girl in high school.
Yeah.
I thought it was so funny at the very end when it was like, I think it was after the credits when they bring in like a girl version for Forky. It was like a knife or something. And they did that. Didn't they do that in the first Toy Story or second one?
They did it with Barbie and Ken. And it was really funny.
Okay, Barbie and Ken.
That was in the second or third.
Didn't they do it with like Potato Head too?
They did. Yeah. At the end of the first one with Mr. Potato Head.
It was so satisfying to see that, like that dumb knife show up with his crappy hair and the clay face. And he's like, Forky's so excited. did.
Didn't you want Woody and the shepherd girl to kiss?
You know, not. Yeah, I wasn't into them.
Oh, really? I liked her. She was like a porcelain action hero. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, did you see that theme too? What you just said, like, it was like a female character that was the most powerful of everyone in the movie. I feel like movies
she
are...
She was very capable, and Woody kept screwing stuff up.
Yeah, and so when I talk about, like, that motif of leaving the Garden of Eden, it's not necessarily... religious, but it's just like a repeated theme. Like, well, I feel like she was actually like way cooler, way braver, way everything. Yeah. And she tempted him to leave his comfort zone. And that's where I was getting at.
You know, what's cool about her is she didn't need him.
No.
Like, she was fine on her own.
She was more like saying like, hey, it's good out here, but do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm. You know, what's interesting about Woody. I feel like Woody's the main character, but in the same way, like, they can't really have fun with him. So he's really boring because he's the main character. They can't screw it up. So they have like the other characters have tons of personality. I felt like this in a lot of the Toy Stories where I feel like, okay, get Woody off the screen. Like, show me the dinosaur.
Isn't he the best? Like, the dinosaur's voice? I laugh every time I hear his voice. I know.
Like, when they're playing the video game, his arms are too short to hit the jump button and the other buttons.
On a broader note, I find it so fascinating. You know, a lot of, like, it's just, you kind of dismiss cartoons and, like, kid stories, but there is a big appeal for that stuff. Like, amazing appeal for it. It's almost like this, a parable of, like, people try to be so complex all the time, and then you have these little kid-like things that are just more interesting than the complex, I don't know.
Yeah. I agree. Like, this movie is really palatable. I think it totally appeals. And to your point, Andy, they can have these characters. They don't have to try to be serious. They can just goof off and have a funny character.
Yeah.
And it totally works.
I also feel like this is not necessarily a kid movie. This is definitely a movie for all demographics. And I think parents will enjoy it as much or more than the kids, honestly.
Well, and that's what I mean by a parable. It's like the parable was meant for the dumb people. It was meant for, like, the medium dumb people and the really smart people. And everyone would miss it, the whole meaning. And then there was layers for people that were dumb that they could get a little bit out of it. Anyway, it's kind of like that to me. Like, on the surface, for these kids, it's just so fun. But I loved it as an adult, you know?
Yeah, me too. I liked Buzz Lightyear. He's still deluded, which is so funny, you know, because he's been deluded since the very first movie where he thought he was actually a space hero. But and now he, like, he got this concept of his inner voice and
he didn't get it.
I mean, I liked that, you know.
That was funny. He took it literally.
I felt like I'm not trying to
get, but it was working for him.
Yeah, I'm not trying to get religious, but I feel like sometimes religion is just mental, like believing in something, even if it's not real. Like, he just believed this faith that he had an inner voice.
Yeah.
And it was just a cookie cutter button, but it was answering his prayers. It was just so funny. And that, I feel like that's how religion is and spirituality. Like, you, things are all there, but when you start to open your eyes and look for it, you find meaning. And and I thought he was kind of a spiritual character in that sense, going back to the parable, like, idea of there's more than meets the surface, you know?
So I was thinking after Toy Story, it's they have tons of characters. It's great. And I'm kind of tired of Woody, but I would love, like, if I could make a request to Disney or in Pixar, I'll just send him a tweet or something.
Yeah.
Send him a letter.
I would love to see I want to see a Ducky and Bunny spinoff. That's the bunny, the blue one that's really big, in the little ducky. Their hands were tied together. They were at the carnival.
Yeah.
I want to see a spinoff of just those two.
I agree. I agree with you, Ben.
They were so funny together.
And I took my little brother, who's 25, and he lit up when he saw those characters because he knew them from all their YouTube videos. Don't they do those YouTube videos?
Yeah, Jordan and Peele.
They have a TV show, Key and Peele.
Oh, Key and Peele. Okay.
Yeah, Key and Peele.
Oh, that's their last name.
I think there's a lot of room, Ben. I agree with you to, like, push that.
Well, I thought Forky was going to be like the awesome new character, the way Buzz was.
Yeah.
But I think Ducky and Buddy
more
were
of
so
a symbol,
better.
Huh? Yeah, I feel like Forky was not really a character. He was just symbolized toys. But and you know, poor Tony Hill that voiced Forky, is he totally typecast as the moron in every show you see him in, starting with Arrested Development and then in Veep? Like, he's always the moron, yeah. Isn't he? He never plays a person with an intelligence of over 70.
Well, I feel bad because every time I see him, I can only think of his name as Buster. I can't, yeah, I can't think of his character's name.
He's typecast. So, I mean, that's how Forky was. Forky was just this really dumb fork that kept trying to hop in the garbage can. That was
really funny how he just didn't understand. Like, he didn't want to be a toy. He just wanted to be garbage. That was so funny.
Okay. That should we wrap up Toy Story 4? I feel like we covered it all.
Yeah, I'm done.
Okay, that's Toy Story 4. Moving on to movies coming out this week. There is only one movie in wide release this week, and that is called... What is it called? Sorry.
Yesterday.
When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me.
Sorry, I'm just listening to Jack's new song.
What's this one called?
Leave It Be.
Let It Be.
Well, rock on, Jack.
Oh, yeah!
I just played a clip from the trailer for Yesterday. This is such a fun concept. This something happens, some kind of electrical storm, and nobody can remember the Beatles anymore except for this one guy. And so he basically rewrites all of the Beatles' music and kind of claims it as his own and becomes famous as the world's best singer-songwriter because he's just ripping off the Beatles. And then at the end of the movie, at the end of the preview, it looks like he maybe gets confronted by John Lennon and Paul McCartney, but we don't know.
John
Lennon. See what happens. What did I say?
John Lennon died. It's got to be...
Yeah, John Lennon and... Oh, well, I imagined it was John Lennon and Paul McCartney, but I know that John Lennon died. Did Paul McCartney recently die too?
No, I don't think so.
Is Paul McCartney... I think Paul... Because it showed 2 feet walk up, and one was barefoot. And
yeah.
I think that's Paul
McCartney.
So it
was like Ringo Starr.
Yeah, it must be Ringo.
And Paul McCartney.
But if it's an altered reality, maybe it will be John Lennon.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It's like a different reality, so it could be...
Oh, yeah. I mean, who knows?
So it could be John Lennon and...
Didn't the guy...
This looks... I think this would be like the best date movie, because I see the preview, I'm like, awesome. I'm going to want to see it. My wife's going to want to see it. Like, it's not going to be like, she's coming because I want to see it, or I'm going because she wants to see it.
Right. It's like... Yeah, it's one I really am dying to see. It looks really, really good.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised. Yeah. The preview looks really good. On Rotten Tomatoes right now, it's showing me 63%.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's critics. Audience score, they don't have any ratings yet. So with that lower expectation, I think I'll enjoy it because I won't be expecting too much.
I'm worried I won't like it because I'm so excited to see it. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't care too much about the critic. Like, I really, for example, I really enjoyed Alita Battle Angel, and it was critically didn't do very well at all.
But I'm with you. That movie was really good.
Alita Battle Angel, Ben?
Uh-huh.
I love that.
So, I don't know. I mean, it might be just like Bohemian Rhapsody and Rocket Man, where if they're playing good music, you're going to enjoy it no matter what, you know? It doesn't even matter if the story's a mess because we already know it's going to be good music, but the preview does look really good.
And I'm convinced that talent show from middle school and high school, when you see someone up there that you know and they like all of a sudden this magical thing where they're singing like a famous person, they just nail it. It's just so magical. I don't know how.
Yeah. I'm glad to see Kate McKinnon. I love her. But the main character, is it Himesh Patel? Have you seen him in anything else?
I don't recognize him.
He's probably English.
I think he looks Indian.
Sounds like it.
The moon never sets on England.
Doesn't this take place in England?
Yeah, it looks like it does. Ben, I'm looking at his profile, and he doesn't have any credits for any other movies. He does have a credit for a TV show called Damned. I don't know. He's like kind of a new face in the movie scene.
And refreshing too, because he's not this glamorous, like supermodel looking guy. I liked him in the preview. It shows him he's got a tooth or two missing from his bike crash.
Right. That part is, he it just does looks make him more endearing.
Someone like I could be friends with right off the bat, you know?
And I did like in the preview, Ed Sheeran, he's like,
hey, I've got some advice for you. Hey, dude. And he's like, hey, dude, are you sure? He's like, dude, 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 dude. He's like singing it.
And it actually does seem like, so much better.
I do love Kate McKinnon, but in the preview, I was like, wait, I don't want to see, like, she's, it doesn't seem like she, it seems like she's being her SNL, doing her SNL shtick. And I want to see her be a character instead of just like doing her SNL stuff. So,
yeah, you're right. I just,
seems like she might.
I just like her so much.
I do like her. Yeah. But I hope she doesn't ruin this movie. Okay. And that is Yesterday. And then the other movie coming out this weekend, well, it's not really this weekend because it's Tuesday, but I don't know which weekend it is, but it's Spider-Man Far From Home. So should we cover both of these movies next week? Should we wait until Tuesday so we can review both of them? Spider-Man and Yesterday. Okay. Thanks for listening. The best thing you can do to help us is to subscribe on iTunes and rate us on iTunes. Subscribe on any platform, actually, and then rate us. If you have some insights about the movies that we covered, you can record a voice memo and email it to thisweekinmoviespodcast@gmail.com. You can contact us on Twitter @twim_weekly, and we'll see you next week.